Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Not enough steins in the video that we're seeing on MSG, but there are a lot of different Sabre jerseys, and the tour and the fanfare continue for some select Sabres who are overseas right now, ramping up the anticipation for the Global Series, the NHL's first two games of the regular season, which is Buffalo and New Jersey. The latter happens to be our team of the day. But yeah, our content crew is over there. You've got Lukanen and Paterka. And one of my favorites, Lukas Rusek, has been spotted in most videos as well. So they're
all
banging.
You know what is funny is you mentioned the drum. Stein. I should have brought I have my opera house Stein somewhere around the house here. So I should have started the day with a nice big Stein of some probably water. But okay.
Like a Patrick Laine Stein of water.
Oh my gosh. That jug of water was impressive, but we'll talk about Laine maybe later. Listen, Sabres fans, I want you guys to watch that video and learn the chant. Like, we have to have that chant at the arena this year. Whenever Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is in net, makes a big save, the big Jumbotron's going to be going, Luukkonen, Luukkonen, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. It has to be like a chant. Like, the whole crowd has to get into it. It has to have that feel. Like, I love when there's, like, Nashville does a great job, right? We had them as our team of the day yesterday, but they do the whole, it's all your fault, it's all your fault about the goaltender. And it's a fun chant. Like, we got to get some chants going, a little bit like European soccer type feel. And that Luukkonen chant is fantastic. Let's get it going.
It'll be a video board, not a Jumbotron, just so you know. I'm just trying to get you in.
Or Frigidaire or a GE or whatever it is.
Okay, I'm really hoping Frigidaire now comes out with the latest ice resurfacing machine. That would be outstanding.
Olympia or Zamboni. Olympia. Those are the two.
Yeah. Well, it's funny watching Luukkonen in those videos, isn't it? Just how shy and awkward and uncomfortable he gets with the fanfare. What is that like?
It is a little like, okay, so when the Czech and Slovak fan club came into Buffalo, I remember when we walked into Labatt's across the street from the arena, the brewhouse, and then all of a sudden they started chanting our names, right? It's like there's a lot of people watching right now. It's uncomfortable, but it feels good. It's one of those things where Luukkonen, to me, is a very, very well-liked person in the locker room. And it goes a long way. Ryan Miller was a really, really well-liked person in the locker room, respected person. It goes a long way. Henrik Lundqvist was well-liked, respected, right? It goes a long way. And I think we're seeing that out of Luukkonen. And even his interaction on social media with JJ Paterka, they were asked, who is the better golfer? Luukkonen says, I'm the better golfer. And JJ goes, oh, no, I am the better golfer. And they have that little, friendly banter or whatnot. I absolutely love that. But as a goalie, you need to know your spot. It's not like you are with like a center. You have that partnership with your wingers, a D partner, like they work together, they have that partnership. A goalie has to be on its own, but you have to be able to filter in and be liked and be a part of the team. And I think Luukkonen has found that balance now, and it's really fun to see.
So keep following our Sabres social channels and you'll see all the content unfolding over the next week. As we get a little closer, we are obviously well under a month now to the Prospects Challenge at Harbor Center. And with that, it'll be a very rapid launch into the NHL preseason before an undetermined number, at least to us, of Sabres hopefuls will be heading back to Europe and try to get that thing off the ground in a hurry. You've got a preseason game, obviously, in Germany, and then the regular season begins on October 4th and 5th against our team of the day.
Yes.
The New Jersey Devils. Let me lay it out for you. The Devils ended last year with 81 points. A 31-point drop from the previous year. They went from third in the standings to 24th. They went from fifth in goals for down to 12th. Not terrible. Mm-hmm. They went from eighth in goals against down to 26th. They went from 10th in scoring by defense down to 25th. This is largely built around the absence of Dougie Hamilton, but not exclusively. What's really worth remembering here, under Lindy Ruff in 22-23, when they had the 112-point season? Yes. Was they had a defense corps that saw Dougie Hamilton score 22 times and 74 points in a full season. And they were also getting 20 minutes a night, meaningful minutes from Severson and Graves. Yeah. Last year, Severson and Graves were gone. Hamilton only played 20, and they had almost full seasons from rookie defensemen Luke Hughes, Simone Nemitz, and they just couldn't get it right. In their big year 2 years ago, they had 42 wins combined from Vitek Vanacek and Akira Schmid.
Yep.
Last year, those two guys combined for 22 wins amidst a five-goalie caravan. You
when
can
Jake
see
Allen got there, it got a little bit better, but it still was not up to par, right? Like their goaltending like completely sank them. Because you talk about the numbers. Okay, so if you're going to be 12th in goals for, 13th on the power play, somehow the PK was 10th in the league. I don't know how that works when your goaltending was that bad. But your goals against per game was 26. There's the problem. Dougie Hamilton not there, not enough goaltending. And I really was critical of Tom Fitzgerald last year. Like, you had to know in October this was not going to go well. And in November, you had to make a move, especially in the crease, right? And then they
had... Wait. Why so quick to criticize on the heels of a 112-point season?
Because you could tell that the goaltending... And Vitek Vanacek was a great story the year before. And, you know, it had some success through the COVID year with the Washington Capitals. But you could just tell. In my opinion, you could just tell. Dawes and Schmid were not ready for that yet. You didn't have anybody to help Vitek Vanacek. He couldn't handle the load. And you need to go and make a move. You had Montreal that had the three goalies. You had, you know, Markstrom, that the situation there. I felt like by the time you got to
Buffalo had three goalies. Detroit had three goalies.
Yeah, there was so many options there for New Jersey. By the time you got to Thanksgiving, something needed to be done because when they made the move, which was trade deadline, it was too late. You couldn't come back in the race. You're just trying to salvage some form of games at the end of the season, but it was too late for New Jersey. I felt something needed to happen. So I was critical of Tom Fitzgerald. Yes, they lost Nico Hischier to a Connor Clifton hit. That got Connor Clifton suspended. Jack Hughes missed some time. Dougie Hamilton, they had a ton of injuries, but what sank them was their goaltending. But I'm going to give credit where credit is due with Tom Fitzgerald this summer. He acquired Jacob Markstrom, was able to get that done. He went out and got some really, really significant adds to his lineup that are going to make a big difference. You know, Brett Pesce, Stephen Nason. We talk about Paul Cotter. Our one date in Henderson, we got to see Paul Cotter. But the Vegas, like, he added a bunch of really good pieces. But the main one is Jacob Markstrom, and that's going to make a big difference.
Maybe. And that's, you know, this is going to be an interesting discussion, I think, on this team that the Sabres are going to open the year against with back-to-back games on October 4th and 5th.
Yes.
When they were trying to salvage last year and bringing in Jake Allen and letting Lindy Ruff go, bringing in Travis Green, the record was better under Lindy than it was under Travis.
Yes.
They were under 500 after the coaching change, never made the push, couldn't stay in the race. They were basically in the race all year, but on the periphery, like the Sabres, for, you know, the first 60 games, and then they just never were able to get any closer. Now, so you mentioned the general manager. He's fully aware that the Devils have made the playoffs just twice in the last 12 years. He gave Travis Green a shot. He moved on to Sheldon Keefe.
Yes.
That's going to be really interesting here. October 4th and 5th, Lindy Ruff behind the Sabres bench, Sheldon Keefe behind the Devils bench for the first two games. Like, I love this. It's just another layer.
It's not quite Tortorella and Vigneault taking each other's place between Vancouver and the New York Rangers, but there's a, we know Sheldon Keefe from being in Toronto, that rivalry Buffalo-Toronto for the last few years, and Ruff with Buffalo. So there's a little bit for everybody. You know, the Devils have their old coach. We have the, you know, we're watching the Toronto's coach that's now in New Jersey. There's a lot for everybody to get into that narrative.
And let's continue down the path of roster reconstruction that you identified under Tom Fitzgerald. First and foremost, and he couldn't do anything about it, is the health of Dougie Hamilton. If Hamilton comes back at the level, let me quiz you with this. In the last 10 years in the NHL, only Brent Burns and Roman Josi have scored more goals from the blue line position.
Yeah.
So, like, people need to recognize, especially with all the skill that the Devils have up front, how big of a catalyst Dougie Hamilton is in this picture for them. But now this Hamilton picture is so different in the group of six. Not only Pesci, but Brendan Dillon. And I realize there's a lot of analytics majors that might not love everything about Dillon, but he ends up finding himself on good defense groups, you know? And he's had a pretty impressive career of almost 900 games. And he usually goes in like 3 to 4 year segments with teams. Kind of like Laviolette used to do, I think, right? Like, he's got a shelf life seemingly, but
it's Pat Pesci. Burns, motto right there. You know, he's got Dillon has 2-3 years with a team and then he's got to move on, but he's still effective. Takes a lot of penalties, but if the Devils' penalty kill last year was 10th, despite bad goaltending, who cares if Brendan Dillon takes a lot of penalties? They're going to kill him.
So here's what their group looks like. Hamilton and Pesci, Dillon and Siegenthaler, with now second year, 20-year-old defenseman, Luke Hughes, Simone Nemitz, and Kovacevic brought over from Montreal as a seventh guy, basically.
So this is interesting what you just said, Duffer, because I was trying to put my defense group of six and who would play with who, right? So I go on Daily Faceoff and I see what they've got and whatnot. I have Siegenthaler and Dougie Hamilton played together and Brett Pesci and Luke Hughes played together. So now it drops Brendan Dillon on a third pair with Simon Nemitz, the veteran and the young guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but Sheldon Keefe has all these multiple deep partnering group that he can use. And you talk about Jonathan Kovacevic, you know, coming over from Montreal. That was another young player in that group of young defensemen in Montreal that got a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. I like that group of six, seven defensemen.
I do too. Yeah.
It's a really good group. A little bit of everything. You got the offense. You got the quickness. You got the youth. You got the experience. You got the toughness. And, you know, they got Curtis McDermott that plays forward. But if he had to, could play D as well. Like, he was a defenseman in junior. There's some added toughness there. So they've got a really good group at the blue line.
They've got him for 3 years as well, McDermott.
Yeah, I know.
That's a nice luxury for Curtis to be able to come into a situation like he did at the end of last year and clearly establish himself on favorable grounds and then get himself a deal. Now, who doesn't have a deal? Dawson Mercer. Now, Matty Beniers got his deal or agreed to yesterday. Cole Sillinger got his 2-year deal with Columbus today.
Yep.
Dawson Mercer finds himself still in this group of, I'm going to say six. Raymond, Sider, Jarvis, Harley, Perfetti. And Mercer are basically, like, to me, the six kind of standout potentially RFAs that don't have deals yet. The Devils, you know, they're carrying some extra weight on Puckpedia's forward graphic right now. So they've basically got about $6 million left in cap space. What do we think Dawson Mercer is going to get after he got kind of swallowed up in a very down year for the Devils?
Okay, it's a down year for Dawson Mercer, but I still think that, you know, 33 points, 20 goals, is the bare minimum right here. I look at Mercer mostly being a he was 55 or 56 points the year before, so I'm looking at Mercer being a 50-point guy. I think a 22-year-old Dawson Mercer over maybe a five-year deal, you go five, you take him right up to free agency, but it doesn't matter because, you know, it's just to try to secure the next 5 years and bring him at a really good number. I think if you went 5 times 5, I think it would be it would probably be where I think that would fit.
Do you think he would take that? Like, this is fascinating to me because
I mean, Bernier's a $7 million. I think Matty Bernier,
but he's the franchise though.
He's a better
player.
It's
totally different.
Yeah.
He and this goes back to the Oiler discussion as far as how Broberg and Holloway were never going to get paid in Edmonton.
Yeah, no.
Based on who's around them. I would say the same probably applies to Dawson Mercer here. Mm-hmm. When you look at who's ahead of him, you've got Timo Meier forever. You've got Hughes and Heischer way ahead of him on the depth chart, no matter how good Dawson Mercer turns out to be, right? You've got Jesper Bratt forever. Like
Andre Palat.
Right. So there kind of has to be a recognition here that Mercer's probably not going to be a
Hughes
devil
and Simon
forever.
Simon Nemets are only on entry-level deals, so those guys are going to come up. So you need to get money for Luke Hughes in a year from now, Nemets in two.
So if you're Mercer, do you go even shorter and then just hope to go somewhere else to cash in big? Or do you play the team-friendly exactly what you just laid out, like 5 times 5, which would be really nice for the Devils?
If the Devils went short-term on Mercer, it's a 1 or 2 year deal. You can't say 3 year deal because you need that money in 3 years because that's when Nemets is up and that's when you're going to like run into some issues. So I think if you would give Mercer a 1 or 2 year deal, you can't give him a 1 year deal because all of a sudden he pops, right? And you're stuck. You got to re-sign him and he's going to go to arbitration and he's going to cost you a lot of money. So I think if you go to a 2 year deal, you could probably 2 times 3.7, 2 times 3.8 to try to like say, hey, let's get you to, you know, when you're 24 years old, play it and let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I still think that a Dawson Mercer, number one, the Devils, if they wanted to sign him to a 5 or even a 6 year deal, and in a couple of years have to move on from Dawson Mercer, the number is gonna be fine. People are gonna like and want a Dawson Mercer. I would want a Dawson Mercer. Like I've seen him from the time he was at the Prospect Challenge with the Devils here at Harbor Center, and I've always liked his play. Kind of a better Miles Wood. Remember, we always liked Miles Wood and the way that he plays and skates fast. Like Mercer is a much better, but still the same energy, the same type of game. So, and better skills. So, no, I don't think a short term for the Devils and Mercer would really be in the cards. I think they got to try to get him to agree to, like, again, 5 times 5. I'm sure Mercer wants closer to 6.
Right. I agree.
You'd have to say, like, listen, 5 times 5 is not bad. And you make that for 5 years. And then after that, you're UFA and you're going to be 27. Like, you're going to be a young UFA. Go for it. But I think 5 times 5 is where the Devils would want him to be.
You mentioned Nason and Cotter coming in the forward group. Thomas Tatar is back. He bounced last year between Seattle and Colorado. He should have known full well, being located in the Garden State, that things were not likely greener elsewhere. He found out the hard way. Now finds himself back in New Jersey where he scored 20 goals in the 22-23 season. So we'll see. We'll see if another go-around for him can help. But they definitely seemingly have a lot of pieces in their bottom six.
Yes.
That can do what is needed under Sheldon Keefe. But you may recall...
A lot of veteran pieces.
They do have a lot of veteran pieces.
Eric Kolla and Nason
may be at the absolute peak of his career right now. So question is, can he do it outside of Carolina, where he just became so good the last 2 years, especially at crunch time in the playoffs? Yes. But you heard me pause on Markstrom. Yesterday, we decided collectively at the end of the St. Louis-Edmonton offer sheet saga that it was whatever, right? not life-changing, standings-altering moves. What if the tandem of 34-year-old Markstrom and 34-year-old Allen is just, you know? Like, is that possible?
It's possible, but Markstrom and Allen being just average, right? Average, when you're spending, if you're the Devils, you're spending $6 million on your tandem because the Calgary Flames retain some money on Jacob Markstrom for the next 2 years. So if you're the Flames and you say, we're getting average, right, from our goaltenders, it's better than what they did last year. It puts them in a better position. Now, Jacob Markstrom last season was a top 10 goaltenders. When you look at goals save above expectation, what he did with a bad team in Calgary. Calgary was a bad team. And when he left, all you saw was goals go in. Like, he got lit up in Calgary. Dustin Wolf and, you know, whoever played there got, you know, it wasn't good. I think Markstrom is going to have, and Jake Allen's a veteran, steady, average at best, average to average plus, but those two are gonna be fine. I really feel like I'm not a Markstrom fan, and I've never really, it's a little too erratic for me, but the efficiency is there. The numbers are there. I still think he's going to be fine in New Jersey.
So what should we expect on nights one and two, which will be days one and two of the regular season, because here the games will be happening early in the day when Buffalo and New Jersey face off in Prague to get things going October 4th and 5th. What, like, who's ranked higher? Who's projected higher? And what should we expect to see from these two?
It's funny enough. You want to see what I wrote for my 2024-2025 predictions of the New Jersey Devils and Buffalo Sabres? They play three times. They play twice in Europe and once in Buffalo. They do not play in New Jersey this year. The Sabres will not play in that beautiful building at the Rock, you know, the Prudential Center in New Jersey. So twice in Europe and once in Buffalo. I wrote down 1-1-1. I think those two teams are very, very, very equal.
Okay.
Now, and I really believe what we're going to see in game one and two, well, if history repeats itself to a certain way, is that Lindy Ruff will utilize his top players a ton, knowing that they're coming back home and they have a week before they play again, and utilize, and Sheldon Keefe will probably do the same thing, wanting to get off a strong, sending a message, I'm going to play the crap out of Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier and Dougie Hamilton. I think we're going, like, it's a big heavyweight tilt. Mm-hmm. Thompson, Jack Hughes, Cousins, Hischier, like, that's what you're, Dahlin, Hamilton, Power, Luke Hughes, like, that's what you're getting.
And are we going to get Luukkonen both games?
If that was me, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
I think the Devils would probably go Markstrom Allen.
Really?
I think they go Markstrom Allen. But if that's me, I'm saying, you know what, unless something, you know, is leading up to this and you want to manage. But if that's me, I'm like, okay, listen, prepare to play the two games. Prepare. You have a full training camp. You're only playing one preseason game and then one late. Like, there's not six preseason games where you're playing half game, full game, whatever. Like, there's not a lot of game action before that. I'm saying you're going both games, Luukkonen.
Do you think the first game affects the second game? Or do you think they have the plan and they stick with it regardless?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a riverboat gambler when it comes to that. I'm saying no. I say you set the plan. You say, let's go. And I don't care what people are going to say. Look, you know, Lance Lesowski had an article in the Buffalo News talking about the goaltenders. And, you know, Luukkonen is the clear-cut number one. What did he do with Reimer and Levi and how that all goes? And you know, I played for Lindy, right? Lindy Ruff, when coaching, has always had that, I have the one guy I trust, the one guy I believe. I played 72 games 1 year. Dom would play almost all the time. Ryan Miller played a ton, right? That's always been the way. Even before that, Lindy was an assistant coach with the Florida Panthers with Doug McLean. It was John Van Beesbrook that played a ton. That's how it was. Now, Lindy's evolved. I get it, but it's two games in Europe. You put that into a little bit of a bubble and you say, that's Luukkonen two game and let's go.
And then you come home on the 11th, and you have the LA Kings, and then hopefully some sense. Huh?
Right? You come home on the 10th?
Is it the 10th that game is? I don't know. There's an app for that, Marty.
It is the 10th and the 12th. The LA and the 12th. Florida.
Okay. Sorry. I've had Amherst on my brain too much this week. The Amherst home opener's on the 11th.
When the schedule came out, Duffer, I'm like, you know, the Sabres have their home opener on Wednesday the 10th, and then they play Friday the 12th. And then I look at my schedule, I'm like, sorry, folks, it's Thursday the 10th and Saturday the 12th. So,
yeah. Well, you're still not connected to me on LinkedIn. So my brain is not in a good place. So until that happens, and then knowing full well that you've only got less than 25, 30 minutes left in your week and you're leaving me stranded on an island again.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm disheveled. I apologize, but I'm being honest.
Yeah, you know, that's okay. I'm sure that you'll have a lot of good friends joining along tomorrow and Friday as I'm making my way up to the beautiful state of Kentucky for a couple of days. And then,
some white picket fences there, babies.
Some black picket fences over there. They're all painted black. It's kind of like the thing. Like the old farms in Kentucky, they all have black fencing.
Well, that's not true because I just saw white recently. What's with the black?
I think the black is more like the old school. To be honest with you, and somebody made
I shouldn't have said picket. It's more like the ranch style.
Ranch. Like, but I want to say that those that have the black fencing, mm-hmm. you're not allowed to use the black paint anymore. Or if you're a new fence, you put up a new fence, there's something that they don't want. But if you're grandfathered in, so the ones that already have it, keep it mm-hmm. that way, like they were 100 years ago. So that's why, like, that's very certain part of that, the Kentucky, the state is very dominant in like having that standout black fencing. I like the black fencing in Kentucky. I like the white fencing, and I have natural wood, like the East Aurora type of fencing at home. I just feel that Kentucky has that different look when you drive around.
I think it's beautiful. I really, I was briefly in Kentucky this year with the Rooster Tail Festival being in Southern Indiana. Had a little, quick navigation through Kentucky there.
Drive over the bridge in Cincinnati to get through Ohio, Kentucky, and then over to Indiana.
Yeah. I've spent no time in Cincinnati other than driving through it. And that bugs me every time because it always looks like it's way cooler than I think it is. And I'm like, I need to spend some time here.
That riverfront there with it used to be the Cyclones IHL building, but now it is the Cincinnati ECHL team building right there downtown. And then you have the baseball stadium, the football stadium. It's a really, really nice sports complex there right on the river before you cross over into Kentucky.
Sabres and Devils open the season in Prague, October 4th and 5th. The Devils are our team of the day. It's going to be sad watching the Prospects Challenge in mid-September here in Buffalo without perennial Devil Graham Clark. He has moved on, so I think he'll miss out on maybe his fifth Prospects Challenge, but regardless, it's a six-team affair. Each team gets three games. Make sure you check it out at Lecom Harbor Center. First game for the Sabres is on Friday, September the 13th. They'll be followed by the Saturday tilt, which puts a cap on FanFest, and then the Monday game. Tickets are available, sabres.com/prospects for $10. Check it out. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.